Moncrief on News Talk.
This weekend, the World Federation of Right to Die Society's annual conference will be taking place in Dunleary. And one of the speakers is Tina McCafferty. Tina is CEO of the Tutura Hospice in New Zealand, where assisted dying has been legal since 2021. Tina, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean. Thanks for having me.
If you could, because it's obviously not legal here. Many countries are having this discussion. In New Zealand, how would you describe the discussion that took place prior to legalisation? Was it a bit of a fraught affair?
The story for New Zealand is that it actually, Sean, it was a multi-year affair. So there was three bills that had gone through the New Zealand Parliament system, starting in the 90s, all the way through to 2014. Oh. And then in 2015, another bill had gone in from the members' ballot. That was the End of Life Choices Bill in 2015. That was the one that through, you know, over that period of 15, 20 years, that was the bill to finally get through. And I think from that, you know, I'm just talking from the New Zealand experience, but certainly from where we sat as a hospice, we thought that this is the one that will become inevitable. Mm. You know, you could see around the world that there's a relationship really between democracies and human rights in this issue. And like all issues of human rights sensitivities, you know, you had your fors, your againsts, and your undecided. And so it was a long, long period of discussion, debate, coming together. Sometimes that was a bit ugly. Sometimes it was really informative. What we learned in that was that coming together actually to talk, we found that both sides of that debate actually had so much in common. Mm. You know, those who said that they were opposed, what do you want? And they said, we want people to, with a terminal illness, to live well, to get great palliative care and to die well. Mm. And when you said to the other side, what do you want? They said, I want to live well. Yeah. I want to have great palliative care and I want to die well. So really what happened for our organisation was it was really only the options to die well that the two sides had in common. And we thought, you know, you don't want the voice of the individual who's dying to be drowned amongst the barking ideology wars, yeah. Right? And so when we looked at around the country and countries where this was illegal, we made the decision that actually that end choice belonged. It was the human right of the person who was dying. Mm. And so that law went into place in New Zealand in 2021. And really it's worked safely and it's worked well ever since.
Yeah. So could you describe for us the safeguards that are in place? Because I suppose one of the premier objections to it would be a family might talk somebody into it, you know, that they mightn't make that decision and be completely aware of the decision that they're making because they're ill.
Sure. So in the New Zealand experience, the law says that you have to be 18. You have to be a New Zealand citizen or resident. You must have a terminal illness that's been diagnosed and that you are likely to have about 6 months of life left. You must have a condition of where you're in what the law says, irreversible decline. And you must have what the Act calls unbearable suffering, where any intervention it makes that suffering still not tolerable. So the person with the illness gets to define that. If they want to explore their legal choice for an assisted death, they make an application to support and consultation for End of Life New Zealand. That sets a process where two independent doctors have to assess that person against that criteria. And that, so the big thing about that is that they are cognitively, they have the mental capacity to understand that decision. Mm. And that has to be signed off by two people and then the registrar for assisted dying. So within our law, you can't access it simply because you've got older. You can't access it if you have any mental health issues, and you can't access it if you have only by the means of disability.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of monitoring and auditing, including the fact that if you are accepted in New Zealand under the criteria, you can choose any time within 6 months, and you get one, you know, because this is your choice, it's not anyone else's choice. So you've got that 6 month window, and if the person still feels like, oh, you know, I'm actually doing better than I thought I was, They can choose to extend that. They can only do that once, and then they would have to go through a mental capacity assessment again, right? So there's very good safeguards there. And even with the medications, there's a strict process about the medications that are released 48 hours before that person has chosen the time and manner and place that they want to have that end of life choice, and that medications goes out strictly only for that person in a almost like a guard, you know, the way that almost the security guards would take money from the shops, right? So it goes in like that. So, and then also in New Zealand, there's the whole support and consultation and end of life New Zealand, which has the monitoring and quality reviews and the audit process, and a really good structure which is headed by a position called the Registrar for Assisted Dying for New Zealand. So there's a lot of safeguards, a lot of transparency, and a lot of monitoring, which is critically important.
Mm. And at Tuturi, you're the only hospice that offers this in New Zealand.
Yeah, so at Totara Hospice, we went through quite a journey to get to the position, right? Mm. Which was really about, is this in conflict with our values, and is it in conflict with palliative care values? And we went through this hilly journey, you know, of kind of intense work and rest periods, but we actually found that assisted dying was not in conflict with our values, and we went out with that position. So at that time, we were the only hospice in New Zealand to have an integrated service. Now, 3 years on, a couple of our partner hospices have begun to dip their toes firmly in the water around having assessments, etc., on site. And we really support them in that. And I think that's because, Sean, people have seen that the sky's not fallen in, there's not been an apocalyptic crisis. Mm. We're talking about less than 1% of all deaths in New Zealand.
Right, and you also offer the kind of more normal palliative care as well.
Absolutely,
yes,
absolutely.
And is it the case that the law is such it is, or is it just a policy that no one working at Tutura can actually suggest it to a person to the extent of, do you know we have this option?
The law in New Zealand, the End of Life Choice Act, has a specific clause in it which says that the health professional cannot initiate a conversation. So people have to be really clear that if they want to just get information or make an application, that they have to be the ones to initiate that conversation.
Yes, okay, mm-hmm. Right. So that's another, I suppose, firewall against that happening. The methods then, is there a choice of methods?
There is a choice of methods. So once the doctors are sure that the person is competent, that there's no coercion, that this is exactly their decision, part of that approval process and I guess it's the deciding what you want as your end of life choice. So as part of that choice, the person will say, I would like to die at home, and I would like to have my family there. And they will ask you, what way? So you can take drugs orally yourself. Mm-hmm. You can take an IV injection yourself, or you can choose for the doctor to give you those drugs or to give you that injection. I can tell you that in New Zealand, over 95% of people choose an IV injection by their doctor.
Right. Okay. Because you'd. Why is it actually that most of them would choose the doctor to do it rather than doing it themselves?
In experience, I have a hypothesis about that. Yeah. Right? And my hypothesis is that, you know, in really great healthcare, you're walking with the patient all the way through the journey, right? Maternity to maternity and the relationship. And people have built an intimate trust with their healthcare provider in this. And I think it's the final act of care. They really trust that the health professional's got them and that they are at peace and all is going to go well. And I think it's the quality of that relationship.
Yeah. Now, as you said, there's cognitive tests. Say on the day, because these would often be people in their 80s who have been very ill. You know, we can all have an off day. Is there a cognitive test that day to make sure
they're
okay?
There is, under the New Zealand law, there is a final assessment. So that happens on the day for everybody. And yes, there are some elderly people who choose to do this through the disease process that they have. But certainly in our experience, there is a range of ages, a range of genders, a range of ethnicities. So this is not really a choice that's made specifically by one group. I think that in the evidence in New Zealand, the data will show you that range. It's really about people's autonomy when they're experiencing suffering, which for them is not, they're not dying in the manner in which they lived, and they want to make a different choice about that.
Does it ever happen that families disagree with their choice?
It hasn't happened within our hospice. I'm sure in the world of humanity, you know, there will be people who have disagreed. But I think in healthcare, you know, if you were to go to ICU and someone had a terrible accident, God forbid, but if they did, you know, sometimes you get a family who's under stress, and that stress of the accident makes that behaviour worse for a while than it does better. But what we found is that when it comes down to it, family members don't want to see the person that they love suffer.
Yeah.
And when they see their suffering being relieved, and they see that they've got dignity in who they are, our experience has been that family members will really rally around that. Because assisted dying doesn't take away the fact that you're losing someone, right, and the pain of it. The people choosing assisted dying under our laws are dying. They are terminally ill, right? So what they are choosing is the manner of their inevitable death. And I think that families know that that death is inevitable, and ultimately that their loved one is making a choice for them. That's been our experience anyway. Yeah.
Now, as I understand, there's a review about to start or going on at the moment of the law. In your experience, because you've been operating within it, obviously, what would you like to see any changes?
We would. So as an organisation, we have put a submission into to the review. And that's us saying that we would like the clause that says only the clinician can initiate that to be removed. And I'll tell you why, Sean, because it's at odds with all the other legalities around healthcare, right? So within health, clinicians have an obligation under the Health and Disability Act, their code of practice, to give the patient all options that are legally available to them. So the gag clause has dissonance with that, right? And the fact that it doesn't allow it. And we think that it also favours those patients who are highly articulate and able to navigate the health system in a very sort of health literate way, which not everyone has. And the other thing we would like to see removed is the 6-month prognostic period.
Okay, and extended to how long, or put a limit
to a year, or in some jurisdictions it's not there at all. You know, you're terminally ill and you're suffering. The reason that we would like to see that is, you know, any fantastic clinician, and there's so many of them, will tell you that prognosis is an art and a science. And so having someone suffering and someone saying, I'm not sure if it's 6 months or if it's 5 years and 11 months or right. So we want an appropriate response to someone suffering within a legal criteria, and the six months is a barrier to that. But that's in our experience of it being a safe law.
I suppose the issue around the clinician bringing up the subject is that it's open to even the appearance that someone's pushing it.
Yeah, I mean, I work with some really amazing clinicians. So our medical director at TOTARA, Dr. James Yap, he will always say that he wants to be able to give his patients the information that all the information that's legally available. And he'll say to me, Tina, it's not fair. You know, if we go to oncology, the doctor needs to say to someone who's got cancer, these are your options, including all the private options that 90% of people can't afford.
Yeah.
Right. But they have to tell them it anyway. And he will always say it just does not sit ethically well with me to not be able to discuss that with my patients.
Yeah. Though I assume if someone comes to TOTARA, they know, you know, they know that's available to them.
Absolutely. And we have an obligation as an organisation to make sure that our community knows about all of our services. Mm. Right? So within our website, if anybody wanted to look, you will see that we have a very clear statement about assisted dying. And it also tells the people that if they want to talk to us about assisted dying, then they have to raise it with us because legally we can't raise it with them.
Yeah.
So we make sure that information is available. And, you know, over 3 years, Sean, we've now, so we're talking about 3 years worth of human beings going through our care. So we roughly have in our care about 1,400 people a year. And over 3 years now, we've done 28 assisted deaths. So you can see it's a small minority, but it's important. And I think that what we've learned most of all is that this is about a human being's right to feel that they're in control of something that's not controllable.
Yeah.
Right? And that most patients who even apply, it's almost like they want the choice in their back pocket, and then a very small minority will use it, as is their human and legal right.
Mm.
But these are not floods.
Yes.
And tsunamis, yes. Of numbers, right? As I said, less than 1%. I think that's an important number to, you know, for you and listeners just to ponder on for a second. But less than 1% of all deaths in New Zealand.
Mm. And the people who choose it, is there a reason for doing so about, as you said, about control? I want to decide when things end for me. Or is it things have become so unbearable, palliative care can't cover that for me anymore?
It's a mixture. Like, you know, nearly 80% of people who choose an assisted death are receiving fantastic palliative care, right? So there's a bit of a myth that, you know, we need more. I mean, we love palliative care. That's what we do, right? But, you know, a very high percentage are in palliative care. For most people, and again, I can only talk of our experience, for most people, it's the fact that they're sure, and it's they want to die in a way where one patient said, I just want to recognise myself.
Hmm.
I want to go out as me, not a shell.
Yeah.
Of me.
Yeah.
And for some people, it is about what their definition of suffering is. But, you know, we have to remind ourselves that within palliative care, that I'm really proud of palliative care, but within palliative care, there's ways that death is hastened or postponed all the time,
yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Whether that's even just giving someone an antibiotic or whether that's cessation of eating and drinking because the body, right? So it's really about a human being's desire to leave the earth on their terms.
Yeah.
And that's the strongest vibe that I can share with you about meeting so many patients and their families. You know, we do dying and living well every day in a hospice. Death is the thing that we do well. And what's different about an assisted death is simply the certainty of it.
Yeah. Do you have, because you've been doing it for a few years now, do you have, if you like, a procedure on the day of what the sequence of events is?
Yeah, yeah. So we have the same procedure whether it's our patients, right, or whether it's patients who've been refused care in another facility because of the refusal issue for some providers in New Zealand, we opened our doors, if you like, to anyone who was seeking that support. So if it's our own patients, they know our system, they've been in our care, but it's really about welcoming them and the family. It's about asking them, what do they want? You know, 24 hours before, would you want some photographs? Do you want particular type of music? Who do you want to be there? And we make sure that whether it's in there's a special almost like a bespoke flat in on our property that they can use, because if sometimes in New Zealand, families are really large. You can have 14, 15, 16 people. Sometimes it's within our ward or a patient's home. But what is it that you would like? Who do you want to be there? What's important to you? You know, what photographs, albums, pictures, and then making sure that the person and the family know the clinicians who are working with them, the nurses and doctors who are taking care of them, the counsellors who will be there for them before and after, just like with a usual death.
Yeah.
And making sure that they have it the way that they want it. And that happens for at least 24 hours.
Yeah. And the people who are working
with
the patients, did they go in to say goodbye?
Well, if the patient wants them to, right?
Yeah.
Because you've made a connection with another human being that you're caring for. And it's like when someone starts to go into a natural death, you know, you don't, sometimes you can tell clinically when that is, and sometimes it happens quite suddenly. We've had a real mixture where some patients just want their family, and we'll of course be present for the clinical side of it. And other patients have said, we'd really like you to be there, and staff will be there because that's the human being that you've made that connection with. But it's like everything else in humanity, Sean, it's a liquor of all sorts.
Yes, right? Yeah, of course. Tina, that was, I don't know if fascinating is the right word, but it was fascinating. That was kind of one part of it, at least. Tina, thank you very much for coming in to speak to us. That was Tina McCafferty there, and she's the CEO of the Tatura Hospice in New Zealand.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.